called me and said, is there any way you can take a 16-year-old? And I said, we don't have the staff right now to handle the younger ones. We have a big student missionary population, but we'd like for them to be, you know, a little bit older. And he said, well, right now he's looking for a place to serve, and I know he's kind of young in the middle of the year, but we'll try a little later when he's a little older. I feel badly that that opportunity never came. A short report on the finances from yesterday. 37 persons have signed up so far, and some have come this morning and said, you know, I still want to sign up, and I had already taken the list, and I'm going to be turning it over to the union. Tomorrow we'll make an announcement of where you should send those that have signed up, where you should send your per diems, and the union and the conference administrations will get together to decide what is the project that would be most appropriate. So tomorrow you can expect some kind of information. For those of you that slept on it and like some today felt like you missed out yesterday, the list will still be available if you would like. And for those that enjoyed the feeling so much having signed up once, you can sign up for your other half today too. Just kidding. My wife reminded me yesterday that I left you all hanging. I told you about the traffic jam in Peru, and I didn't finish the story. Somehow something clicks inside when it's time to quit, and I quit real fast. I preached at the alumni weekend for Southern last year, and I spoke to the young people about making a decision, a commitment. I told them about the 1% solution, and I said there's a small group of persons that are getting ready for the Lord's coming, but some of us are blocking the traffic. Make your commitment. If you want to keep one foot in the world and one foot in the church, it's better that you just get out and quit blocking traffic. Either get in or get out. Because blocking traffic doesn't mean we get anywhere, or it means we get nowhere. And I didn't realize the impact it made. At least one of the vice presidents from Southern had tears in his eyes when he came up, and he said that's what our young people needed to hear. But I went to South America. I came back nearly 2 months later, and I wasn't surprised when I went to the BM, the village market, and I had several students that were working there, stocking the shelves, stop me and say, Brother Gates, thank you so much for that message. It changed my life. I wasn't surprised because I was in Collegedale at the university. But I got a little more surprised when I went over to Ultawa to the Samaritan Center to drop off some things, and a car passed me on the road, turned around and followed me back and said, I thought that was you. I just wanted to tell you how much your sermon changed my life. I was getting farther away from Collegedale, so I was more surprised. But then I went to Chattanooga. And as I went into the mall there at Hamilton Place, the Salvation Army man kept saying, excuse me, sir, excuse me. And I said, thank you, I've already given. No, it's not about giving. Could you please come? So I went over and said, yes, can I help you? He said, I just wanted to thank you for the sermon you had. It changed my life. He said, I was there. Well, I was now really astounded. It all happened on one day, you know, same day. And then after I got down there, I went across to another part of town, and I went into Circuit City to look for a piece of equipment for the TV station. And while I was there, there was a young man with bracelets on, multiple earrings, loaded down with jewelry. He certainly could, if he'd have gone down in the Titanic, he wouldn't have been able to swim. And he said, excuse me, can I help you? I said, I'm looking for this equipment and that equipment. Then he said, don't I know you? I said, I don't think so. I've never been here before. He said, but I know you. You must have come into the store before. I said, no, I never have. I said, do you go to any universities around here? That's where it was. It was your sermon there at Southern that changed my life. All of that happened in one day. And so I thought to myself, if you were taking a random sampling, you know, and statistics, to have that many in one day, that sermon must have changed lives. It's time. There's a polarization going on in God's church. People are making decisions. People are looking for answers. And our lives, our testimonies, are the most powerful way to change lives. And God has called us with a special message of His soon return. I'm grateful to be part of that. I'm grateful you're part of it. There's a cathedral in Lima, Peru, called San Francisco. Below the cathedral are some catacombs. I had heard that The tour only includes a little narrow path through the catacombs, and there's a little string of lights. But in the back, further, they don't let you go very often to see the rest of the story. So my brother and I went on the tour, and we took flashlights. And we hung around the back of the group, and then finally when it disappeared around the corner, we took off in a different direction. And we went way back, and we saw all the dungeons, whereas they claimed that these are burial grounds for the saints. In reality, you find there's a lot of dungeons, little narrow holes at the top with a big old tiny, just filled with bones. And when they put a skyscraper down somewhere in town, they ran across a tunnel that goes between the cathedral underneath, the catacombs, across over to the Inquisition, to the Spanish Inquisition. And they used to take them underground over there and then bring them down, and they would keep them under the cathedral. So after we were done, we came back, and the guy who was giving the tour was very upset at us, and when he was stating these are the burial grounds of the saints, and we said, what about all the dungeons you have back in the back? And he said, what do you mean the dungeons? I said, well, the ones that are way back there. How did you all get back there? With our flashlight. He was very upset. And later we went across to the Inquisition, and I've taken a lot of GC men who came down to the Union, to visit the Union there, take them for a tour of the Inquisition. The current government at that time was a little bit leftist, so they left it open. The church would not have wanted to have people see that normally. But you go down there, you can come into a big room, which is the judgment hall. You have three priests that are the judges, and the accused is brought up before the judges. There's a door with a little hole in it this big. The accusers can shout their accusations through the hole without ever being identified. So you can state that you saw this, you saw them do that, and you have to leave, and nobody has to know who the accusers are. Finally, when it's time to decide if you are guilty, they turn to the crucifix in the back, and there's Jesus hanging on the cross. And then they ask, Jesus, is this man guilty of heresy? They pull a cord, and Jesus nods yes. If you go downstairs, they have mock-ups with people on them, of fake people. They have the rack. They have another one where there's a man with a weight on his feet, and they have his shoulders pulled out of their sockets. Another person is sitting on a chair, and they're turning a wheel, and the wires are cutting the wrists off. There's a lady sitting with her feet in some stocks, and there's a fire built there, and her feet are painted with pig's grease, and then they take out the little board, and your feet fry for a while. And then they cover it up, and they say, do you confess? You don't confess? They pull it up and let you fry for a little bit more. Another one, they have a hose in their mouth, and they're filling them up, and their stomach is ready to burst, and they keep putting water, and you have to swallow and swallow until you can't swallow anymore, and then you drown. There was a tour going through, and I noticed that the lady was telling all the tourists from Europe, this is where all the criminals were killed. And with so much violence in the world today, don't you think it's time we return to those days where criminals get what they deserve? The tourists seemed to agree. So I quickly went over to that group, and I said, could I ask a question? And I said, as I understand it, the Inquisition was not about criminals. The Inquisition was whether you agreed theologically with the church. Did I misunderstand? Oh, no. She said, well, actually, you're right. So I just heard you tell the tourists that it's about criminal activity. Were you mistaken? Don't you think these people really were not criminals? They were just, some of them were Jews, some of them were Indians of the native religion, some of them were Protestants. But we're not talking about criminals here. We're talking about people who just happened to have a different belief system that were tortured and killed. She was silent for a while. And then I said, well, I think you ought to tell the tourists the truth when you come through here. And then she said, let us go on with the tour. Some people, some saints, they knew what it was like to suffer for the Lord. In Acts 5, 40 and 41, the disciples were taken before the Sanhedrin. They were told not to preach anymore. They were beaten and they were sent out. And they went out rejoicing. Hard to believe that they could suffer for the Lord. In Matthew 5, 11 and 12, blessed are you when men shall revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. All for Christ's sake. Hard to understand. Acts 12, 5 to 10. An angel comes and frees Peter. That's not hard to understand. When you live in God's presence, it's easy to understand that angels love to walk by your side. I keep my angel pretty busy on many occasions, but I'm going to tell you about two of them. After going to visit one of our missions in the North Peru mission, I've gone up the coast from the Union. I helped to close out the accounting year, made sure all the audit records were okay, printed out for the auditor. I came back down to the Union. I rode on the bus all night, and when I got out, instead of taking us to the bus terminal, the bus dumped us out in the middle of town. Said there was a problem or some traffic thing, and they just, everybody get off here. And here I was, stuck in my suit with my hand case out in the middle of town, and I'd been traveling all night, and I had to empty my bladder, and I was pretty desperate, and I started to look around, and there was no place to go. I would have given anything to be dressed in normal clothes. I could have gone on a street corner like everybody else. But I wasn't. I was dressed well, so I felt a little embarrassed. So I looked around at where I could find. I was in a very bad section of town, and I decided way down the hall there, way down the street, there was a little public toilet. It looked like a public toilet, but I was very uncomfortable, and I thought, well, maybe I'll act kind of nonchalant, and I walked down, and I took a dash down there. It would only take a couple of seconds. I gave him a few cents to the guy at the door, and I ran in. And I thought, well, I'll be in here only just a few seconds, and I'll be out again. Nobody will know that I'm here. It was too long. I heard a commotion at the door, and there I was, the only one in there, and I was in a position of helplessness. When all of a sudden, a real tall gang member with a red bandana around his head and a sword in his hand came running at me and ran at me with this long sword. It was a homemade sword made out of a construction rod, but it was sharpened, and he had a little handle on it, and I guess they fight with it. And he ran right at me and started to put it right at me. I knew exactly what he meant. He meant to take my briefcase, or he meant to run me through. And while I'm sitting there in this surprise and unable to do anything about it, all of a sudden he stops. He looks over my shoulder. His mouth drops open. He pulls the sword away. He puts it behind his back, and he goes and stands in a corner like a little whipped kid. I look behind my back. I don't see anything. But whatever he saw there scared him to death, because when I walked out, the guy at the door that charged me didn't expect me. His mouth fell open. He didn't expect me to walk out at all. And I knew that my angel had been there with me. But sometimes even that's not enough. A few weeks later, I was notified that all the computers that I had ordered for all our different schools and the university and the mission offices, the hospitals, had come in, $70,000 worth of computer, and I was supposed to go pick them up at the port. So I said, can I pick them up tomorrow? I just took my starter out of the car, and I sent it off to be rebuilt. He said, no, it's already been cleared customs. You got to pick it up today. So I had somebody give me a shove with my station wagon, and I went off to the port of Callao, the big port there, which is known for its violence. And I went to that part of town. They loaded up my car. It took 3 men to get me going again. My car was kind of heavy. I took off, and as I was going through the really bad section of town again, I was saying to myself, boy, I'm glad I'm in my car at this time of day. It's 10 till 6. And I said, I'm glad I'm in the car and not on the street. I thought too soon. Because just then the red light went on, the temperature went up, the engine started bucking. I pushed my clutch in. It froze immediately. The engine died. And I had to pull over right next to an old bus that had been sitting there since the 1950s and Martin Luther King's days. And without wheels. And we all knew that was a drug center, you know, for the street. And I pulled over right next to it. I quickly took off my jacket, my tie, tried to look normal, but it's kind of like fish bait hanging, you know. And while I was looking there, I realized there was no water in the radiator, so the store was open 10 more minutes, a little store. I went in there. They were surprised to see me, but I borrowed water, put 2 buckets of water in, never filled it up. I looked underneath, and it was a freeze plug with a big hole in it, and all the water was running out. So I realized no starter, no way to get water in the alternator. The store closed. They closed all the gates. They were not about to stay open late. And there I was, stuck by myself on the street. I looked one way, nobody. For more than a block, there was nobody. On this side, there was one person a block away walking the opposite direction. Except for the traffic going by, I was by myself. And while I'm standing, I'm saying, Lord, I am in really hot water. What am I going to do? Just then I heard a commotion in the back. I looked up, and I was being circled by gang members. Each of them had a big rock in their hand. Then I knew I was in trouble. Son, I'm saying, but Lord, I got 70, I got all this money. And I thought of all the offerings that have gone in to buy those computers. I mean, yes, it was part of our church budget, our union budget, and it was part of the budgets of all the different fields. But guess what? We got to protect God's assets. We have a responsibility to safeguard them. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm not going to give my life for the computers. I mean, that's not what we're called, you know, a life for your friend maybe in the Bible, but not for computers. But at the same time, you have a responsibility to safeguard. And so while I'm saying, Lord, I guess I'm going to have to leave because I can't give my life for these. But at the same time, it just hurts me to see your assets be lost. But I'm going to have to leave those with you because I don't know what else to do. I'm by myself and I have these guys coming around the car. Each of them picked up. They paused for a little bit to see if I was armed, and I wasn't. And just about that time, I made the decision, okay, Lord, I'm leaving. I took one step backwards, and a man laid his hand on my shoulder. I jumped because I had been looking for help, and I was by myself. As I looked around, I looked into the most perfect face I have ever seen in my life. And it was so perfect that I forgot all about the gang members. I was thinking to myself, man, if this guy was on TV, he would be a movie star. You know, I'd never seen a perfect face. I mean, none of us have perfect faces in real life. On a screen, you can see it perfect, but even when you go on a screen, they paint you up, you know, and get rid of all your defects. And so, as I was trying to analyze his face, he tells me, your life is in danger. You have to leave. Now I remember it again. And so I said, I know my life is in danger, but I don't have a starter in my car. My engine is frozen. I'm parked in a gravel uphill. I can't even be pushed. And I said, and then these guys are assaulting me. And I said, I don't know how to get out of here. He said, get in, I'll push. Sure, you're going to push. By yourself, it took 3 men to get me started. He said, get in, I'm going to push. Then I remembered what normally happens to people who intervene on an assault. In Lima, Peru, there's a standard practice. If you point out a pickpocketer or somebody stealing a suitcase at the bus station, you say, watch it, somebody's stealing your suitcase. They come up behind you with 3 razor blades in their hand and they slice open your face. That's standard practice. So if you do squeal to protect anything but your own goods, you need to get out of there immediately because you will be sliced up. So I thought about him. What are they going to do to him? But as I looked at the guys on either side, they were sitting there with their rock frozen. They weren't even moving. And it kind of crossed my mind that maybe they were related to Lot's wife. Because they weren't moving at all. They were just sitting there like this. Okay. Maybe he thinks he can push, but he won't be able to push this car. So he said, put it in second gear. So I put it in second gear and I rolled my eyes up. He'll never be able to do anything. But then the car started moving forward. Okay, so he can push, but it won't start. The engine is frozen. But it did start. And then I stopped and he said, leave. And I said, no, I got to pay you a tip. He said, I don't need money. I said, in Peru, you always give a tip. So I pulled out a couple of dollars and gave him. He took the money reluctantly and he said, please leave, your life is in danger. And as I pulled out and got on the street, I went down about 2 blocks and the engine started getting hot again, of course, with no water. And I pulled into a gas station. It hit me who had been my assistant. You never think of him, you know, right then. Somehow your mind doesn't, that's not an option that's in your mind. Walking with angels. As you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you can go in the company of angels. And though some have given their lives, they also did it in a company of angels. I'm sure of that. Hudson Taylor, the missionary for China, who founded the Inland China Mission, had a dream to reach all of China. Well, China's a rather large piece of territory, and he had a big dream. And he went by himself, and he also followed George Mueller's example of not raising funds and just letting God provide. One day, right before the Boxer Rebellion in China, Hudson Taylor was accused by the British ambassador to China of having caused all the problem. His donations went shooting down when England heard that Hudson Taylor was causing problems in China. He wasn't. But the devil twists things. And George Mueller felt impressed to start sending him money. And so George Mueller received donations and sent them over to Hudson Taylor and Hudson Taylor's work with 100 missionary families out there being supported by faith. Just continued on uninterrupted until the problem was cleared and then funds started flowing again. God always has a plan. And he uses us to help others. He uses generosity to help. And God pours it in about as fast as it goes out. Sometimes faster. Hudson Taylor, when he died, said, I never gave anything to the Lord. He always gave me everything. God is looking for excuses to bless us. I told you about the time that he provided that $1,000 for me to pay the bill early on in the game when I was paying fuel bills. Well, the following year, I came into that same situation, but this time it wasn't $1,000 that I needed. I needed $4,000 because the program, you know, just keeps growing. And I went to the bank and it was $2,000. I didn't have any doubt whatsoever. I knew God was going to put more money in my briefcase. So I got the $2,000 out. I flew in 200 miles, got the money, went back into the interior. It was Thursday night. Friday morning I was supposed to pay all the bills for the end of the month, all the gasoline, the workers that were building the school and so on, and the fuel bills, everything I had to pay. So I flew in 200 miles and I slept well that night. I just knew, it wasn't even on my mind the slightest doubt that God would provide the money. I got in the morning, I read all about Elijah again. Oh, I love that story. The oil was there when I needed it. The food was there. I just rejoiced in the Lord, and I knew that the angel had come and put money in. And then it came time for me to count my money. I confidently took out that envelope. I got out the money. I started counting. I knew there was $4,000, but no matter how many times I counted it, there was only $2,000. Then I got mad at the Lord. Why do you keep doing this to me? You put me in positions where I can't do anything about it, and then you tell me, use what you have. And again, the impression, use what you have. Don't tell this to me. You always tell me to use what I have, and I don't have any. And I forgot that God has 1,000 ways to provide for our needs of which we know nothing. So then he said, what's that sitting by your lap? You mean my notebook computer? No, don't talk about my notebook computer now. I can't live without it. I love my notebook computer more than I love my airplane. And he says, I thought you preach all the time that everything we own belongs to God. I do. So who does that really belong to, you or me? It belongs to you. And I'm telling you, didn't the lady offer you $2,000 for it 2 weeks ago? Yeah. Take it to her and sell it. But what about my computer? I mean, I do my email, my accounting on it, my reports, my webpage, everything on my computer. Hypocrite. You preach that God will provide for all your needs. And yet you're not willing to trust me with your needs. Okay, Lord, I'm willing. Make me willing. I don't want to give up Isaac quite yet, but if you'll convince me, I'm sitting here. I'm waiting to be convinced. And all of a sudden, like bullets going through my head, you know, ask and you can give, and seek and you shall find. My God shall provide for all your needs according to His riches and glory. Do not worry about anything, but in all things by supplication and prayer by thanksgiving, make your request known unto God, and peace of God which passes all understanding shall keep your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. And boom, 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 all these main verses like a machine gun went shooting through my head. And I said, okay, Lord, I give Him. I understand. You're going to provide me another computer if I need one, so not to worry. I took that computer. I flew over to that village where there was a missionary lady who wanted to buy the computer. She wrote me a $2,000 check. I said, could I borrow it one last time when I go to town? She said, sure. So I flew into town, I cashed the $2,000 check, I logged on to my email and got my email at the airport, and one email caught my attention and it said, funds. So I read it. Dear David, my wife and I were praying last night and we felt the strongest impression to take out $4,000 out of savings. We've already deposited it into your business account. God was just trying to teach me to pry my fingers open to let go of 2,000 so that I could receive 4. God is just looking for excuses to pour the blessings on you. I'll open the windows of heaven and pour out such a blessing. But the reason we don't receive those kind of blessings is because we're not willing to let go of what we have already. We act like it's ours. It doesn't belong to us. Nothing of what we have belongs to us. Your education? Sorry, you didn't make your brains. You know, your house, your lands, cars, children, your spouse, did you give them life? No. Everything you have, everything I have, is on loan. So when God says, give, He's only telling you to give of what is His already. And if He says, give it all away and starve, that's His problem. But He won't let you starve. The little boy with the 5 loaves and 2 fishes, I'm sure when he was asked, Andrew asked him to give that lunch to Jesus, he probably thought to himself, now I'm going to go hungry because there's no place else that I can get another lunch. But I'll just trust Jesus with my hunger. He did. Did he go hungry? He took food home. God is just willing. He's not willing. He's waiting impatiently for opportunities to pour on the blessings to His children so they can finish the work. And our personal finances beginning there. And then in the finances we manage for His work as well. He's waiting for excuses to pour it on. And we try to manage things according to the way we see things. We're so human. Well, I was so excited with the $4,000. I took it out of the bank and I told them, double the work. Speed up the process. Hire more workers. God has a source of funds we don't know. And I spent the $4,000. I committed the funds right then and there. And then the next Sunday, I had to go to the States for some speaking appointments. I went to the States and all of a sudden it hit me. I don't have any money to buy a computer. The Lord gave me the money. I spent it all. I got too excited. And now I'm stuck. And I started having delirium tremens. I started to go into withdrawal. And my mother saw me pacing the floor like a lion. I said, what are you doing? She said, I need a computer. I can't get my email. I have to write things. I'm getting behind. She goes, but I thought God provided you some funds. No, I spent it all already. I spent it on the school. He goes, well, God will provide you one. Well, I know, but I need one now. He said, why don't you use your dad's computer and then, you know, and you can use that for right now. Okay. I logged on and there was an email from my division president. And I read it and I said, Dear David, we just so much appreciate what you're doing throughout our division. We have gotten a collection of funds here in our office. We have $3,000 for you to buy any piece of equipment that you want. I wrote back to him, and he was at annual council in Brazil. That was about a couple of years ago. And I said, do you mind if I buy a computer? He said, my dear friend and inspiration, you buy whatever you need, just send us the bill. So I got a computer that was twice as fast, twice as big a screen, twice as big a hard drive, twice as much RAM, twice as much modem. Everything was twice as good as the one I gave up. Isn't that just like God? We try to hang on to our little things, and God has bigger things for us, and we're just so scared to let go. It reminds me of the guy walking along the cliff. He was walking along the cliff, and he slipped over the edge, and he was hanging on by a little branch, 1,000 feet straight down. He was shouting for help and no help. He was all by himself, and finally, desperation, he started turning to God. And finally, God answered him, they say. A deep voice said, what do you need? And he said, I need somebody to catch me. Could you put your hands under me? And God said, my hands are under you. Just let go. He's hanging there. He looks down. He doesn't see anything. He said, what did you say? I said, just let go. I'll get you. He looked one more time. He didn't see anything. So after thinking it over carefully, he said, is anybody else up there? He wasn't about to trust God with his life. I tell you what, we're not going to be able to trust Him with our life either if we don't start experiencing the little things right now. It's time for us to start mentally detaching ourselves from the items that we call ours. One little thing at a time. As God says, let go. You know the story in the early writings. Sister White saw going along the road and they let go of the cart first and then they ended up with horses and they let go of the horse and finally they had to take their shoes off. And finally they had to have a cord, and the cord got bigger as they went along, and finally there was not even anything to walk on. We're not going to make it across the valley with that big cord unless we let go of the cart and the horse first. And we have a lot of carts and horses, don't we? We've been blessed in this country like no other country. And that's why we've had such a trouble running and winning a race. Other countries have grown tremendously because they sense the need. But I know we preach and you hear it a lot, but really we don't have that much need. We manage pretty well. It's time to start letting go, because very soon it's across the valley. I was at Auburn Academy this last year for camp meeting last summer, earlier this summer, this year, at the Washington Conference. And an Adventist pilot friend of mine, a mission pilot, took me over to visit another friend of his, another Adventist pilot that is a pilot for Paul Allen, one of the business partners with Bill Gates. And Paul Allen has his own hangar with five large jets in it, two 757. And we went inside, since one of his pilots is an Adventist, he took us through the whole thing. It's very private. He doesn't allow anybody in there, no cameras. He's a very private person. He doesn't want that to get out. But he took us through and showed us the two 757s, which is the ones that he flies. Wall-to-wall mahogany. A private master bedroom with a shower. You know, telephone, internet, anywhere in the world. The full works. You can have a full board meeting and have a whole boardroom in one of them. He owns, of course, baseball teams, and he sends the baseball team on one 757, and he and his wife fly in the other. How much? I asked him. He said, the cheapest plane here is $40 million. He has five of them. He used to run around a lot, be little at home, until he got Hodgkin's disease about 20 years ago, and he realized how short life was. And now he spends most of his time with his family. He realizes that he's going to walk away from it all one of these days, and the most important thing he can do is to spend time with his family. You know, the older we get, those who have put our treasures here on earth, the farther away we get from our treasures. Because I imagine Paul Allen and Bill Gates, one of these days, will be so close to death, they're going to realize they're only 1 year away from leaving it all, and they have to get emotionally detached from their goods the older they get. Because they know it's not theirs anymore. It's going to be somebody else's to manage. But those of us that put our wealth ahead of us in heaven, the closer we get to death, the closer we get to our will. It's a wonderful thing. I've seen a change in my parents as they've watched us work. When they've gotten their hands on resources, instead of thinking of retirement, man, as fast as they get their hands on it, they put it on the front lines. They don't have anything left. Of course, they got the farm. God has blessed them. When I say they don't have anything left, they don't have any resources left. But it keeps coming in. God keeps blessing them. And as soon as they get it, off to the front lines it goes. And I'm scared for them. But my dad's finally convinced, man, something just clicked. I don't want to have anything left when I have to walk away from it. Matthew 6, 19-21, lay not treasures in heaven. I'm sorry, lay not treasures for you up here on earth where moth does corrupt. But in heaven, because where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. What group are you in today? Are you in the group that's learning to let go? Or are you providing for the next future 20 to 30 years for yourself? I'm not sure that we have the next 20 or 30 years with security ahead of us. I don't really... The announcement this morning on the news that the data recorder on that jet that went down, the data was unreadable, I don't swallow that full. I don't think they're in a position to release what was on that data recorder. And instead of cause chaos, simply to say the data is unreadable, because none of the other recorders and data things that have gone down past are unreadable. They found them at the bottom of oceans. They found them in explosions. They're always readable. But this one just happens to have no data on it. We live in times that are very uncertain. And it's exciting if you've put your anchor deep in the rock. But if you have put your security in your resources, you have reason to be scared. So this morning I want to encourage you, as you make decisions in your own life, as you make decisions in administrative areas, in the future strategic goals, I want to encourage you, let's be thinking more short-term than long-term. The sooner we get to the point of total dependence, the faster the church will grow. It's about growth. It's about quality. I was looking through the thing. I was talking to Elder Gordon the other day, and he mentioned the three areas. What did I do with it? Here. The three areas. And I was glad to see that quality was first. I had confused it. I thought that growth was first, because growth cannot happen before quality. But no, it's quality first. And quality, unity, and growth. That's in the right order. First, you have a quality relationship with the Lord, with your church family, with your personal family. I was asked yesterday how our children are doing. I am thankful to say that with our five children, three girls and two younger boys, they have become part of the mission. We have told them that we will not sacrifice them. If they need us to stay, if they need Daddy to stay home for a personal need, I'll cancel my plans. But if they would allow me to go to the front lines where others are needed, it's a sacrifice on their part. But I need their permission, and they have given me their permission. They're sacrificing. They're learning early in the game that it does take sacrifice. But if they have a personal need, they are of extreme importance. And they are adopting as they come along in life, and they're making decisions that are just thrill me to death, of which they become part of the mission too. They're incorporated. Our young people are so important. That's where the future lies. But in reality, I'm looking at people today that I believe with all my heart the majority of us are going to see Jesus come. And if we believe that, there's going to be changes in our life that are appropriate to that belief. And I encourage you, make that, there's something in your head called a switch, power of choice. It can be switched up or down, yes or no, and we're always switching it. And you know what? If you flip that switch today and say, yes, Lord, I'm willing to learn, just like I did that one day, Lord, I'm willing, but it's painful, but just teach me. Help me to be willing. And God gave me all His promises, and I let go, and I almost cried. And God filled my hands. And all of a sudden, I'm realizing, as soon as it comes in, let go. As soon as it comes in, let go. It's not mine. Just brainwash yourself. None of that I have is mine. So when the Master says, do this with it, do it. It's His. Just realize who it belongs to, so that you detach yourself. Cut off those little cords that keep you down. And then you can just walk freely. I'm looking forward to the day when Jesus is coming very soon, and He's called us to be able to share that message, that wonderful joy, that it requires a decision. It will be made for you one of these days if you don't make it now. You will be forced to make the choice one way or the other. And like the man who slipped off the cliff, if you haven't learned to trust some of your difficult areas now, I'm rather positive that you won't be able to make it then. A very large percentage of our church members who are not getting ready will not make that choice to trust God with their life if you haven't started now. May God bless you today in your decisions, and this week has been a blessing, and I hope you've been encouraged to make those tough choices that are filled with joy. If the disciples can be filled with joy because they were suffered for the Lord, imagine how much joy we can have when we give to the Lord and we see God give it back. And pretty soon you become kind of like a funnel. You know, you receive so much from the Lord, you just can't wait to hand it out, because as soon as you create a vacuum, it's filled by the Lord again. And the Lord is looking for an excuse to open the windows of heaven. May God bless you today in a special way. And I'll see you tomorrow.